Welcome to a great episode of Innovation Odyssey. Today, I have with me in the studio, all the way from UK, Michael McDongone, who is a serial startup entrepreneur and also a startup advisor and a mentor. He, as he says on his LinkedIn profile, he wears multiple hats. So I'm very happy to have Michael on the show. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Renu. It's great to be here.
How are you?
Good, good. Sunny day in London. Can't complain.
Oh, that doesn't happen.
I know. It's a rarity. So I'm soaking it up as much as I can.
I always ask my guests, who are they? What did they do? Give it all to me in 30 seconds.
Yeah, perfect. As you mentioned, I'm a serial entrepreneur, started my first company since university. I'm on company number 3, which I launched in April of this year. Also former manager over at Amazon, born in the States, been living in Europe for the past 9 years. And yeah, I'm just knee deep into the startup world.
And in the startup world, what is your niche? Is it a product, fintech, regtech? What's it that drives you?
I think that drives me the most is really progress in building. I think I love that part of business the most. So really pushing the needle, executing, and seeing it through. So, you know, solving problems is also like a really important thing, but I just love growing businesses. I love taking it from nothing and turning it into something.
Okay. Would you be able to speak about one or two of your businesses?
I guess I could talk about my most recent one, which is Crosstide. So Crosstide is a fundraising consultancy agency for startup founders. And what we do is we help them acquire grants and loans from the government of Malta. So this is the first launch of it. It's very, very niche. You know, we're focused on startup founders at the earliest stages, post pre-seed-seed stage. And we're only focused in the Maltese market. So launched it in April, conducted sales, generated revenue, and now we're growing and looking at ways to standardize operations, but also to expand into other markets across the EU, as well as other non-EU European countries. So, yep, that's where we're at.
When you say expand the market, does it mean getting more access to more countries like Malta, which have startup-friendly setup, or just accessing more markets as your client base?
Yeah, more of the former, right? Because there are a lot of countries in the EU and across Europe that are looking to attract foreign tech startups, right? So what we want to do is identify these markets and then create an easy channel for foreign startups to enter these markets, right? Because as you know, and anyone knows, you know, when it comes to international expansion, it's very bureaucratic. There's a lot of processes in place and capital requirements. So what we do is we try to simplify that and create these relationships and partnerships with these government officials to make that transition easy. So right now we're looking at Western European countries, Denmark, Ireland, also Italy right now. And in terms of, you know, what type of clientele are we looking for? Primarily, right now, we're just focused on English speaking nations just because it's easier to communicate with. But English is the spoken language of business across Europe as well. So we're open to pretty much any country right now.
What is special about Malta?
Yeah, so Malta is very interesting and an unknown country to many. It's very tiny, population of 500,000. But, you know, what makes them special compared to other European countries? I think right now it's the incentives, so the financial incentives that they provide to foreign startups to base the EU operation there. They, you know, quite flexible in terms of the type of financing. So they offer a loan as well as a grant. They also offer various supports and other resources to help people get situated there. So I think that's, and it's also the sunniest country in Europe, right? So relocating employees there shouldn't be too difficult. I think that's really the sweet spot that Malta has to offer, is the financial incentives, as well as the temperature and the resources.
How long of a relationship, in quotes, do you have with Malta?
I'd say, yeah, about 2 years from now, we were introduced to them by one of our investors when I was the co-founder and CEO of Strabo, which is a fintech application that me and my co-founder built over here in London. So we crowdfunded over on Seeders. One of our investors on Seeders reached out to us and suggested that, for us to explore Malta. So we did. I liked what they were talking about. I went through the process, and then 1 year later, we were able to secure some financing. So,
And I was in Malta and I made some good contacts.
yeah, you're there. You met the Malta Enterprise individuals, right?
Yes,
Yeah.
yes, yes. It's so which is the so okay, still sticking on to Malta. The startups that come to you, who you have successfully directed to Malta, where do they come from?
So a lot of them have come from the UK, I would say a majority of them, and that just has to do with proximity. But I would also say that has to do with the need to expand into Europe post Brexit, right? So it makes a lot of sense that UK companies are going to want to have a European presence, and Malta makes a lot of sense for them to do so. I have been working with a couple of American clients as well as Australian and one in Turkey.
All right. How do you get your clients? Is it word of mouth?
Very old school cold outreach on LinkedIn. It works. I hired a lead gen freelancer on Fiverr. They grabbed access of my LinkedIn navigator, and then we created a profile, automated lead gen and connection requests and messaging, and it's very, very effective. It works. Referrals is like also a huge chunk of the clients that I work with, and that's probably like the best one, to be honest. But cold outreach absolutely works.
I see. Oh, that's interesting. You said that you are doing at this point Crosstide is a consulting agency. Would you consider making it a platform?
Yes. Interesting that you mentioned that. So we are in the process of doing that, and that platform could be a game changer, not only for CrossTide and what we do, but for other companies that do something very similar, right? So, streamlining and automating like application processes, business plan creation, correspondence and communication between like government officials. So really using, and it's not a secret, but we will be using AI, to create this platform and to make it easier for people to expand internationally. So, yep, that's currently in the works.
Your timeline would be 6 months, a year.
I think maybe even before the end of the year, we could have something, well, I would say a scrappy MVP we have. So maybe a better, less buggy MVP, should happen within, before December.
Do you see any particular kind of companies benefiting from the Maltese setup? Is it fintech, regtech, biotech, health tech?
I think SaaS companies definitely. So the financing schemes that are available are targeting tech companies as well as manufacturing companies. Now, manufacturing, I think, would be a little bit difficult because you're on an island, so there's going to be, logistical costs and barriers from import exporting, raw materials and things like that. So I think SaaS is good. I think it's targeting more towards post fundraise companies. So companies that have raised at least a half a million euros, I would say. In terms of industry, I think they're quite sector agnostic. Malta is known for the gaming, fintech, blockchain industries. So you will have a lot of people with competencies and experience there in terms of the talent pool. But again, they are sector agnostic. So if you're, focused on marketplaces or well-being or anything like that, I think, it's a good place, but they are looking for innovative companies. So it should be technology companies that are building intellectual property rather than, basic, I guess, like peer-to-peer marketplaces or anything that's they would deem, not innovative.
I see. Okay. All right. And which is the next destination you're thinking of promoting? Is that a secret?
No, I don't think so. I guess there's, you know, a good thing about Europe is it's kind of small, right? So, you know, we've been able to do a lot of networking and talking to different government officials and understanding, you know, what are their motives and intentions? And are they really trying to attract foreign startups, or are they trying to stimulate their existing startup ecosystem? So if it's more the former, then those are the countries we want to talk to. And some of those countries that we've spoken to, a little bit of Denmark. So I've talked to like one person there. I've talked to Italy quite a bit, and so far that's it. But I think we're looking at those countries as well as potentially Ireland. Yeah, I would say those three are in the pipeline.
How about Estonia? And I also heard about Lithuania.
Yeah, I know Estonia. I know those countries are very, you know, focused on the tech scene. I haven't dived deep into it, to be honest, but that's something I'll definitely look into.
Now, would you consider doing something similar for the US? Because you are an American, and I mean, the US is a giant on its own, you know, it's a whole entire continent. Sorry, South America. But is that, because there's a lot of movement now. I hear that Austin has become, Austin was, and a lot of companies are moving from California to Texas. Do you think you can extend these services to some extent to the US, within the US?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one of the biggest barriers, you know, for the US are the visa requirements. Okay. You know, so that does serve as a barrier. However, you know, to open up and incorporate a business abroad is fairly simple, right? So anyone could pretty much do it, you know, to open up a Delaware C Corp or company over Montana. And now US investors, a lot of them are requiring foreign companies to incorporate and open up a subsidiary or actually base their HQ and holding company in the US in order to invest. So yeah, absolutely. That would be another frontier. Right now it's working kind of backwards in a way. So, you know, mainly targeting US companies and UK companies and everyone else to go to Malta in the EU. But absolutely, you know, the vision and mission is to help foreign startups expand internationally. So that's across all markets.
Okay. Hence the name Crosstide.
Crosstide, exactly.
Oh, beautiful. How about Middle East? Everyone is after their money.
That's also an interesting one. The MENA region is really, really cool. You know, so yeah, they're looking for, you know, family offices over there are looking for investments in the Western Hemisphere. Western countries are looking, you know, for capital anywhere they could find it. Now, I don't know about, you know, opening up markets, right? So like, you know, getting a whatever UK company into Dubai might not be, you know, something that I have heard, at least in terms of like international expansion and like startup strategies. But yeah, in terms of investing, I think, you know, there's opportunities there to try to make that connection a little bit easier, right? Yeah, and that's a little bit over my head, but I do have a lot of, you know, friends and contacts in the startup ecosystem that are talking to Middle Eastern family offices right now.
Would you be able to talk a little bit about your other startup?
Yeah. So the one before Crosstide, which is what you're very familiar with, is Strabo. So launched it with my co-founder, who's now running the show. We launched it in 2020, went through the trials and tribulations of a first time, I guess, tech startup founder. Year one, made a lot of mistakes. Year two, corrected those mistakes. Year three, made some more mistakes. And then now we're in year four, and now it's getting good, you know, but then now we're dealt with another set of mistakes, but or challenges. But yeah, Strabo is doing well. We raised a couple of rounds of capital. What we do, we're a fintech application that helps expats and the modern citizen manage their finances. What's really interesting about us is we could connect assets from all across the globe. So it derived from a personal pain point that I experienced of being an expat in the UK, where I have financial accounts in America, as well as over here, not sure where I'm going to retire. So how do I manage all of these things? So came up with the idea, built it, launched it, and now we have a few thousand users on our application. And now I've stepped down to a non-executive director role. And and we're actually... We're currently raising. So we're raising a top-up round right now, which we have some commitments and yeah, it's doing good.
You think things like Brexit and also, unfortunately, the wars, they probably could help your business, right?
For Strabo or CrossSide? Or for Strabo?
Yeah, let's start with Strabo.
Well, you know, initially it created issues because, you know, with GDPR and PSD2, so fintech regulations, which was like umbrella and blanket regulations across the UK and EU, were pretty much severed, where the UK, you know, had to create their own financial regulations separate of EU. So as a result, a lot of embedded financial partners that we were working with had to discontinue service in the UK or required additional licensing and things like that. So Brexit operationally did pose some challenges, but yes, you know, in terms of commercial opportunities, it definitely does present commercial opportunities, right? So when you have, you know, more expats or more international trade, and, you know, at least on the consumer level where people are balancing and trying to manage, you know, multiple accounts, then it does, you know, we could definitely help with that. But I think on an operational level and a regulation level, it was a little bit more challenging.
Your startup founding background, or the reason for that, mirrors your life background, I think, doesn't it? Raised in Chicago, moving to, studied in Erasmus, now in London. Am I right?
You're absolutely right. You know, have my businesses, you know, like represented like who I am as a person in a way. Kind of, yeah, right? Like I'm very transient. I do have a global mindset. I appreciate diversity and you know, I don't like settling in one place really. I like to jump around. And you know, every time we talk, we're both in different parts of the world. You know, you're in New York at one time and then I'm somewhere else. So
I know. And then I was like, you know, I'm listening to you. I'm like, this makes complete sense why he's doing what he's doing, you know. Did you grow up in Chicago?
Yeah. I grew up in Chicago, just north of it in a small town. Pretty much grew up there my whole life. And then I think what triggered this, you know, this passion of travel and globalization was I did a two-month internship over in Brazil right after university. And that just set me off. And I was like, okay, this is going to be my life moving forward of living and traveling. And then, yeah, that's what I did. I, you know, instead of doing an MBA in the United States, I did it abroad. Instead of going back to the United States, I moved to London. Yeah. And, you know, I just love to be all around the place. So,
okay. A to-go location. You know, which is basically like you want to kind of pick up and travel, and then you say, okay, this is my safe spot. Just because you travel so much, you still have your favorite travel spots. Do you have something like that?
I feel like I have. I'm very fortunate. I feel like I have three comfort spots, like three homes. And yeah, that would be, you know, obviously like Chicago. I would say London, and I would say Amsterdam, right? So these are like my three homes, and these are the places that I go to most often, visiting multiple times a year. Yeah, I don't think I would ever buy like a summer house or a cabin or anything like that, because I just love to explore new places, right? I wouldn't want to go to the same place like every year, you know, in terms of like a cabin or anything like that. I like to, yeah, try new places at least once a year.
I'm going to guess timeshares are not for you.
Maybe not. If the business model makes sense, if it's an investment opportunity, sure, maybe. But I probably wouldn't go.
Yeah, I do. Do you prefer cities or the countryside? Or
cities, for sure.
Okay, yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't changed?
No, I appreciate countrysides. I think they're, you know, I definitely go here and there, but I have a preference for cities.
It would be very fair to say that if you didn't go to Brazil for that internship, your life would have been very different, right?
I think so. Yeah, I think that experience formed a huge part of my identity, or it at least reignited, or, you know, it did something. And ever since then, I've just been...
Are your parents originally from the U.S.?
No, so they're originally from the Philippines.
Okay, but then they came over. So you are a second generation.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And do they share your love for travel?
I think so. Yeah. You know, my mom, not really like, you know, doesn't boast about it or anything, but she travels quite a bit, I say, you know, a couple times a year. She's gone with her friends to different places. So yeah, I'd say so. I think a lot of my family members, they definitely like to travel as well and explore new things. And I, you know, I get inspired by them a lot. And yeah, I think it might run in the family, I presume.
Okay, I see. That's interesting because my family doesn't run in my family. I'm the outlier, you know.
Okay.
I look back. I have one or two cousins, but the rest they move one bit, like they move one chunk, and then they either move back to the home country, or they stay there. And in the first country that they moved to. And it's kind of interesting because I have the same thing as you. I'm transient. And I think that the travel has added a lot of value to the way I see adversity. I almost think I like walk into it knowingly. Because, you know, when you travel, head on.
Head on, exactly.
So... and I think that's generally a good ingredient in the cooking a good entrepreneur. Most of the times, not all the times. So anyway, away from travel to the world of innovation, do you see yourself as an entrepreneur or an innovator? This is your answer, however you define it. Or both?
I think a little bit of both. But I would lead more towards, maybe entrepreneurship. Yeah, I think, you know, I love building. I love business. I love the way it works. I love, you know, sales and, you know, customers and, you know, operating and maximize costs and all sorts of things. And I love business. I think that's what makes me more entrepreneurial. But my brain is it's quite creative, I guess, at times. And I'm always looking for solutions to problems that exist in my day-to-day life. And, you know, it's very common for me to just say, you know, at least like five times a week, I probably say, oh, you know, it'd be great if X could solve Y, or if there was a thing that could do this, or, you know, and my brain always does that. And I just have this list of ideas all the time and I just mark them down. But as you know, ideas are ideas and execution matters more. So pick the idea, run with it, execute, deliver. And I think that's where the entrepreneurship part comes from. Right. And that's the part that I enjoy the most. Is executing.
In one of the conversations, and especially I think this is very relevant as you talk about being an entrepreneur, you talked about solopreneurship. And I've been reading about it, and I have would you like to, as you understand it, define it a bit and say why it resonates for you?
To me, I think it resonates because it feels a little bit more liberating right? To each their own. It depends on how you define and envision entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at entrepreneurship as, you know, running a, you know, huge, massive company with all these direct reports and board of advisors and constantly fundraising and things like that, then yeah, it's a completely overwhelming task. Mm-hmm. Solopreneurship, on the other hand, you know, it's like running a one person company, right? Mm-hmm. And having, you get a lot of freedom, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of what you can do. You're the only person that's making decisions. And I think solopreneurship is great for a lot of people who want to be independent workers, but also want to build. Okay. And I flutter between the two most of the time. I mean, my first company, I was a solopreneur, and then I started a hire a couple of like contractors and things like that. I would still say I was still a solopreneur with my first company. And then, you know, with Strabo, the second company, more entrepreneurship, right? Mm-hmm. Like co-founder, employees, board of advisors, mm-hmm. all sorts of things. And then now I'm jumping back into solopreneurship. You know, both have their pros and cons. And maybe, you know, in my life, there's just seasons of entrepreneurship and seasons of solopreneurship. And right now I'm enjoying solopreneurship.
I love it. Seasons of entrepreneurship. That's like you literally took it out of my head. And that's going to be the title. But is there a difference between a solopreneur and a freelancer then?
Good question. I think a freelancer, you know, relies on client relationships and project-based type of work and deliverables, right? So I think that's more of like a freelance type of endeavor. Whereas solopreneurship, you know, solopreneurship could be something like productizing your service, selling it as a subscription, and you know, generating reoccurring revenue all by yourself, right? So yeah, I think that those are probably two distinct characteristics that would create either, you know, a freelancer or a solopreneur.
Do you have a network of other solopreneurs?
Not really, a little bit. Okay. I'm in a network with freelancers, which is great. I'm also in a network of fractional workers, like fractional C-suite executives, which is really interesting. And then I am part of a no-code community, and the venture studio that I do advising and consulting for is a no-code venture studio, and part of that ecosystem a little bit. And there you'll find a lot of solopreneurs. And you know, what's great about like no-code is that it has enabled people to become solopreneurs. So what has happened before, right? If you have an idea and you're a non-technical individual, what would you have to do? You know, you'd have to hire a technical co-founder or a technical dev agency and spend money, split equity, blah, 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 do all these, you know, things. Now with no code, you as an individual could just learn it in a matter of months and build it yourself and launch it, right? So no code has, you know, it's one of the key technologies, in my opinion, that has led to the growth of solopreneurship.
I see. Okay. Oh, that's very interesting. So as we come down into wrap-up mode, what is your outlook for Crosstide for the next 2 to 3 years? What's your vision? Where do you want to take it to?
Yeah, I'd say in the next 2 to 3 years, we would love to be the channel for foreign startups to expand internationally, right? Okay. So anytime a founder is like, okay, I want to go to Italy, I want to go to Canada, I want to go to the UAE, they think of Crosstide, right? So mm-hmm. that's the outlook for the next 2 to 3 years.
Okay. You mentioned about the product that eventually you will pull in AI into the product, but do you consider that a necessity?
Kind of, only in the process of streamlining, you know, the bureaucratic operations, right? So I think AI can, you know, make it operationally efficient. And that's critical because that reduces the cost back to the client, as well as increases the amount of, you know, FDI and foreign tech startups incorporating in new countries. So yeah, it's definitely a key technology for, you know, improving velocity when we're executing. So, I think, you know, it's not that we're an AI company. It's that we're a company that uses AI. And I think there's a clear distinction to be made that AI is a tool and, you know, we should use it, you know, to serve our clients better and to serve our company better.
So in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years, when I get my building product itch, and I want to buy in a different country, I'm just going to write to you and ask, hey, Michael, where should I go next?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Fantastic. I look forward to that. So thank you for being on the show. I always like talking to you. And thank you for being my guest.
Awesome. You know, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. And I look forward to listening to it, checking it out and seeing you grow.